Welcome back to Season 9 of Talking with Traders. We're into the fifth year of this podcast that began in 2020. Once again, IG have come on board as the sponsor of the podcast. We're truly grateful to have such a global leader in online trading as our sponsors. In the coming weeks, I'll be interviewing various guests from around the globe on the topic of trading. Some of these will be past guests that we invite back onto the show, and some will be new guests. The idea is to attract a broad spectrum of different perspectives from various players in different areas of the markets. None of what you hear here is financial advice, but it is intended to get you thinking about how you might be able to apply what you hear here to your own trading and investing. Remember to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app. That way, you'll be notified when new episodes are released. Or if you watch these interviews on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and give us a thumbs up and leave a comment if you wish. We welcome the engagement. Once again, thank you to IG for sponsoring this podcast into its fifth year, and thank you, listeners, for your continued support. Now, let's get on to this week's interview. This week, we are joined by the Power Team. And when I say the Power Team, Sean Power, Luke Moore, Pete Ward, these guys are all premium client managers at IG in London. Welcome to all three of you guys. It's nice to have a panel discussion for a change as opposed to a one-on-one like most of my podcasts are. Welcome.
Thanks for having us. I like that you've used, I thought you used the Power Podcast because of Sean.
Yeah, Sean, I'm taking credit. I'm taking that.
Yeah, well, the Power Team, the Power Podcast. You guys have your own podcast, which I know it's new, but it's excellent, and we will talk about that at the end of this at the end of this recording. But as we are introducing the three of you, what I'd like to just find out quickly, and literally we try and keep this to 2 minutes tops if possible. Each of you, how long have you been at IG in your roles as premium client managers? When did you join the firm? Let's rather put it that way. And any particular interesting journeys that you've taken to become premium client managers? Because I know invariably people don't just walk into that role. It's something you need to get a bit of experience to get to that point, right?
Yeah, absolutely, Gav. I'll tell that one first. So I'm Pete, and I've been with IG since 2008. I started on the sort of help desk support side of things, joined as a fresh-faced grad walking into the day after Lehman Brothers crashed. So very much a sink or swim moment to sort of get involved and learn the product and how it all works from the kind of from the ground up. And then, yeah, moved on to sort of the sort of premium side of dealing, probably 2012 and 13. A small, brief period elsewhere, and then returned in 2016. And then became one of the team leads and managers of the premium client desk in 2017.
So Pete's the boss.
Yeah. Pete's the boss. Right. The boss. Okay. Sean, what about you, Mr. Power?
Yep, I've been here for coming up to 4 years now. So that 4 years has gone very fast. I came in mainly on the sort of trade. I came directly into the premium client managers team, but maybe more on the trading and execution side. That's my background. I've been in financial markets for a lot longer than these two, probably. I started back in 96 on the old life floor, the futures exchange. And yeah, been in this industry now for 20 years. But I think from my time, what's changed is the technology. And that's really, I've kind of moved with that from that old manual trading to going to sort of online stockbroking, to going into derivatives, to where we are now with IG, which is a sort of full comprehensive multi-asset suite in terms of platform and offering. So, yeah, I've been here 4 years and it's been fun and, yeah, excited to see where it's going as well.
Excellent. And Luke, what about yourself?
Yeah, hey, everybody. My name's Luke. I've been here for 11 years now. Followed a pretty similar path to Pete in the sense that I joined on our help desk side of the business, did that for a few years, and there was an opportunity on the premium client desk, and I've been doing that ever since, really. My story about how I came to IG, though, is a little bit unique, and I think it's worth sharing, is that my dad helped me get the job, but not in some kind of strange nepo baby kind of privileged way. When I graduated, I did a finance degree, but unfortunately, both my mom and my dad were made redundant at the same kind of time that I was graduating. So my dad actually got a job to make cash flow me as a bit of a grafter. I definitely get my work ethic from my dad, delivering food for Sainsbury's. Right. And he was delivering food one day to this guy. It must have been mid-30s in the middle of Kent, and he got chatting to him. Turns out that guy worked in finance, and he's gone, great, my son's going to graduate in finance. This is going to sound strange, but is there any chance you could have a coffee with him or something like that? And it turns out that that guy had a friend that worked at IG at the time, hooked us up. Not hooked us up, but got me an interview or made the introductions. So my path to IG is a little bit more unique and one that I'll be forever thankful for my dad. But since I've been here, it's all me. It's all me raising through the ranks, I'm going to say.
That's nice. It was my dad that pointed me here as well, actually. He has shares in the business, as an investment in his pension. And just said, I said I wanted to get into finance, but not the traditional route, say accountancy or, more exams and all that sort of stuff. He said, well, have a look at this trading firm. And then, 2 weeks later, I moved down.
I think that's how it works, right? Most people get an in somewhere. And it's the old saying, one thing getting the job, there's another thing keeping the job.
Absolutely. And kudos to the three of you then for being there for quite a long time between all three of you. Now, I want to get some of the negative stuff out of the way and then we'll turn this conversation more positive. But one of the laws now, and it's not now, it's new, but it's been around for a while, is that firms that offer leveraged products like CFDs and spread betting and futures, etc., all need to display prominently on the top of their website the number of clients or the percentage of clients that lose money trading their product. It's kind of like the health warning on the pack of a cigarette, I suppose. And currently, IG's number is sitting at 69%. And I watch that. I mean, I know it goes up and down. In fact, 69% of clients losing money is quite low from my history of looking at that number. I've seen it head up towards 80% at times. 69% is certainly towards the bottom of the range in terms of that amount or that percentage of clients that typically loses money. Now, you guys obviously see a lot being right there at the coalface. What I want to ask you is, what are the main things that clients do wrong that mean that 69% of your clients actually lose money trading either CFDs, spread betting, futures, etc.? Any particular common threads that we see with clients that they just can't seem to get right?
No, I think there's going to be a lot of different things that are probably quite primal to humans. I think probably the biggest thing that I've noticed is that picking a direction is very simple. Okay, you could arguably flip a coin to pick your direction, but it's a very simple decision that lots of people around the markets do for lots of different reasons. Now, you can go into the analysis on a company, you can look at a trend line, you could look at a stock that might be breaking out of a price base, but ultimately you've got to make a decision about buying and selling. And that comes not only when you're opening the trade, but also when you're closing the trade. And what I think the biggest difference between, what people would probably stereotype as a professional trader that works in a bank and does it with someone else's money is psychology and risk management. Okay. We don't enforce people to trade with stops. I think from the health of a client base perspective, I think that'd be really interesting if we could do that and say, actually, stops are so important, we're going to legislate that. But we don't do that in the sense of we want people to make their own choices. We don't have, as an individual person, you don't have risk limits either. You have your size of your account, but if you were a trader in a bank, you're going to have someone on your shoulder that says, this is how much risk you can take on. And if you're over those limits, you're forcibly taken kind of off that book or taken off of that asset class, with compliance in place, with all these different systems. The beauty of spread betting and CFD trading is that you have the liberty to do that all yourself. But I suppose that's a blessing and a curse because you're the only one that is going to hold you to account. You've got no one else to hold you to account, and that's tricky.
Yeah, I think all of that is right. And the part you mentioned about the human psychology is definitely the sort of the key point there. I think something like 67, 68, 69% of the stat is always kind of changing. It's come lower recently, I think, because we've tried to do a lot more in-house with our kind of IG Academy and training and education that we offer clients when they open up the account so that they can try and feel a bit more confident, I guess, to get into the market with a bit more knowledge about the actual product. So that's definitely helped bring the number lower. That and trading analytics as well, which we share, which shows, the client's performance over a custom date range. They can analyze where they're going right, where they're going wrong, what products are doing well, what products aren't going so well. But there's an interesting stat, which I think is that, there's the 69% are loss-making, But apparently 55% of the trades that are placed are actually winning trades and 45% are losing trades. Now, that plays into that bit on psyche a little bit quite nicely, which is clients typically are guilty of the 1-3 rule, which is if they see 10 points of profit, they'll whip it off the table and go, we'll use that the weekend. But if they're losing 10 points, they'll happily run it for another 10 points to the 20 points offside. Again, it's a bit painful now. And then they'll run it another 10 points and they're 30 points offside. And they go, right, actually, now that's my stop loss, or that's the level that gets really painful. That's where I need to come out. And so you end up with a scenario where more trades are actually winning trades, but the actual ratios are that's paying you 10 and you're losing 30. So overall, you're a losing client. Now, obviously, what we're trying to do is move the dial with all those clients to say, this is what's going on. This is a very common trade. What you realistically want to be doing is more discipline on the downside and actually running your winners for longer. So do your analysis, put the trade in the market, get it right. And instead of freaking out, you got it right, go, great, I'm being paid here now for my research and it's going right. And you know what, I'm going to go with it, or I'm going to, you know, take half, leave half or whatever, and let it run a little bit. So I think that's an important one to look at as well.
Yeah. I think we're very good now, as you say, that education and helping the transition, because a lot of clients come from a demo environment where the emotion, the psychology and sort of all that, the education, the risk management isn't with real money. And that is a defining factor. When you start playing and trading with your own money, you have to be able to keep hold of, one, your emotions and just manage those risks. If you look after the downside, you can let the profits kind of take care of themselves.
Yeah.
But I think we're very good now as a company at that transition from demo to live environment.
I think the other thing that we're trying to work hard with at the moment, Garth, is we appreciate and kind of, you know, I mean, it's our entire core is that all of our products are built for clients. So what we're trying to do with the Trade Live IG show that we've recently just started, the reason why we're trying to do a little bit more with our podcast is that we need to talk to more clients at scale about learning about trading. Because, you know, we do sit on our desk and we have a specific small number of clients that we look after proactively, but there's a lot more clients that are serviced, I suppose, reactively by the website and by the help desk. We're trying to be a bit more proactive with how we talk to them through more modern media forms like this podcast, like our one, like the TV show that we're doing, through more work on social media. We're trying to make the overall picture of trading a more positive one, and one that people can engage with and not feel intimidated by. I think that's the big thing that we're trying to do.
And as account managers and as a business, we want successful clients. Mm-hmm. We want profitable clients. They stay around for 10, 20 years. Finding new clients is very hard. So we want people to be successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've certainly seen that being a client of IG for probably 15 years now. I've seen how you guys have advanced and you really do put a lot of effort into the education of clients. Like you said, the analytics is a really innovative function which helps to show clients just where they're making mistakes, getting that risk to reward ratio right. I mean, I was quite fascinated by that stat you mentioned, Pete, that actually 55% of the clients that 55% of trades are actually winners, but yet clients are big losers, net. Yeah, so they get the risk to reward ratio all the wrong way around, yeah.
And unlike the cigarette packet, which is giving you the health warning and no upside, there is a huge upside in the product that we offer. If you could do it correct and you can get into that 30% of profitable clients, you end up with, you know, if you're doing it on a spread bet, you end up with the ability to interact and make gains in a tax-free way.
Absolutely. And we'll talk about spread betting as a tax-free product in a moment. But to your point there, you know, trying to get onto the right side of that 69% or 31% number. Look, obviously, if 69% are losing, 31%, it's assumed, are therefore making money. Or let's put it this way, they're not losing money. But I think we all know that that 31%, they're not all killing it and, you know, driving Ferraris. There's probably a very small, thin end of the wedge that is really making a lot of money. I mean, out of that 31% number that's not losing money, what as a guess, would you think is the guys that are really smashing it? Small percentage, I would guess.
Of that percentage, I would say it's going to be normally distributed. So you're right. It is that thin wedge where you see some real kind of rock stars. I think it needs to be. I tell you what's been interesting is we're doing a bit more work now with this thing that they put on the platform called Top Traders.
Yeah.
So we're trying to look at our top 100 performers. What are they doing? Not in a copy trading mentality, because I think we relate to that game, and we're definitely not going to be in that space. We wouldn't be better than some other players in that space. But what we do have is a very unique set of clients that are very profitable. So how can we surface their story and how can we surface their positioning without saying, you know, Mr. Jones is buying Vodafone, right? Because obviously we definitely can't do that. But so we can give an indication now on the platform to say our top 100 clients actually are looking. This morning I was looking at and they were buying oil this morning and they were coming out of gold. And that gives a little bit more context on what that 31% are doing.
Yeah, it's interesting. And that is my next question. You know, what do those really successful clients do differently?
The way I think about this is, I think it's about allocation. So I think where you get to the point as an investor and a trader, because I don't think the two are kind of separate to each other. Everybody seems to have a long portfolio, or should kind of mathematically have a long portfolio that's passive, long the market, because we know on a long enough time horizons, equity market tends to go up. So it's about using that kind of core portfolio to then play on the side of it. So I think it's actually you should earn the right to trade large sizes. So, you know, I think if you can start small, I'll give a story of a client who I looked after for a long while where he was a trend follower. So all he wanted to do was trade the DAX and try and catch a bid and follow it up. He would put on, you know, tiny trades that he called his pilot trade, like a £1 a point with a fairly tight stop loss. But he had to keep putting it on because he kept getting stopped out. Now, when he didn't get stopped out, he got an indication that a trend might be kicking in. So he put another trade on and averaged up. Averaging up is something that we would see that more successful people do as opposed to averaging down. So you could say that the 31% maybe do little things like that. Mm-hmm. But the problem is his P&L percentage looked awful because he was getting stopped out of 8 trades and then only being able to run 20% of them. So psychologically, he had a challenge to run a strategy like that, even though he knew it was successful.
I've got a client who does it exactly the same. He does that on MT4. On MT4, you can build your own trading algorithm or trading robot or whatever you code it in MQL4. He built that exact model, which was happy to be in the noise, being kind of whipsawed out 30 point, 30 point, 30 point, 30 point. And then, but it puts it every time you get knocked out and stop, it bring you back in. And so he's like, I'm happy to do that, happy to do that. And then when you get the swing right, you don't miss the move and you're still in, but you are protecting a big leg lower. Interesting that you had the same guy doing it manually.
But I've kind of heard you mention this on one of your podcasts before, Garth, about starting small and wide and getting big and narrow.
Mm.
So I think that's sort of that psyche. It's almost, I think the successful people do that. They start from a point that they trade relative to their account balance.
Mm.
They don't. A lot of people start from sort of being undercapitalized or over leverage, and they trade relative to their account. They're very comfortable at taking a loss. They're very comfortable just taking that loss, moving on, and they've given themselves room to play. They'll stay in the game. So I think that's I like that saying. I hadn't heard it before I heard you say it.
Yeah, so start tight and start small and wide, and what that means is, yeah, small position with a wide stop loss, and then as the trend moves in your direction and you can see that what you're trading is working, then you start to add to that. So you add to your winner, and then you become bigger in position size and tighter with a stop loss.
Yeah.
And absolutely. And look, to be fair, I can't claim that. It was someone, or I read it somewhere from another trader, and I forget who it was now, but I always thought it was a great way of looking at it. Also interesting what you mentioned, Luke and Pete, about your clients that take lots of small little losses before they find a trend and then run it. You know, I interviewed Tom Basso on the podcast a few weeks ago, and he's obviously a legendary trader featured in Jack Schwager's second Market Wizards book. And he made the point that his stats are such that he's only successful on about 30% of his trades. So 70% of his trades are actually losers, but the 30% that he makes money on, he makes a lot of money. And on the 70% where he loses a little bit of money. And net-net, he's a very, very successful trader, one of the best in the world. And I think that's something that retail traders possibly lose sight of, is that, you know, you don't have to necessarily have a high win rate to be a successful trader. You can actually do it with a low win rate.
I think you've also got to realize that we're all very, very small players in this game. I mean, from being a client's perspective, the market doesn't care who I am. You know, the market doesn't care that I'm awake, asleep, whether I've got a position on or not, or whether I've got, you know, the right size on or not. The market doesn't, you know, for want of a way to kind of sober everybody up, the market doesn't owe you anything. And so the way it was pitched to me by one of our analysts, Chris Beecham, who's worked with IG for a fair while now, was that you're actually defending yourself against the unknown. So when you're putting a trade on, it's not about, you know, trying to pick a, it's very difficult to say, try and figure out which way a political geopolitical, if I can get my words out, which way a geopolitical event is going to swing. It's also very difficult to try and trade a view that may be counter trend when you're looking at Fed policy. It's very difficult to become a macro player and try and hold it for a long time. So just try and think about things in terms of what is the probability that I'm going to try and make money here? And maybe that is reducing size. Maybe that is trying to find a way to take all the emotion out of it. And maybe it's being able to admit to yourself that we're all passengers here. So if you have that stop loss, when I certainly kind of come to this realization with my own trading, is that I can make a decision when I put the trade on to say, this is the price that I'm willing to go into my risk at. This is the price that I'm wrong at. And it might be through, you know, an average true range indicator. It might be, as I've been looking a little bit more recently, is looking at expected move based on an option. So if you know where the mathematical probability of a price is going to go, I'm happy to get stopped out below that mathematical probability. So for whatever reason, I'm putting a decision on and then I've got conscious decisions to take it off. I can walk away from it then, because the rest of it is in God's hands. You know, the rest of it's got nothing to do with me. It's got everything to do with the market. And I think if you can take that emotion out of it and just realize that it is risk on that you're in control of versus profit or not that you're not in control of, it's just numbers moving up and down, but you're in control of it. That's the big key part, is as an individual retail trader and as a successful retail trader, you don't have the risk manager and the compliance manager and all these other legal teams. So whilst that could be a bad thing, it's also very much a good thing, because you've got the ability to flex. You do have the ability to take your own decisions. So if you can get it right, it can become an incredible tool. You know, how many clients have we heard stories of that, yeah, they're not driving around in Ferraris, but they are sustaining a lifestyle that they're comfortable with and they can trade from wherever they want to be. That's really exciting. Or if you can trade to a point where you can continue to contribute to your long-term capital that is growing in line with inflation or in line with economic growth, and you're making, you know, not amazing money, but you're making money that is sufficient. Well, as you trade, as you become a little bit more consistent, you'll earn the right to trade bigger size. And it's not running before you can walk. I think that's really key.
Yeah, absolutely. Pete, you mentioned spread trading, and I want to just touch on that a bit in this podcast. It's not available to everybody listening to this podcast, I wouldn't think, because I think it's am I right in saying that spread betting is a UK-specific product?
That's right. Yeah, so it's a UK-specific product. Everywhere else that we operate, it would be CFDs. But effectively, similar product, derivative from the underlying. Same margins, very much the same costs, same overnight financing fees, same leverage. But in the UK, if you're a UK resident, then a spread bet technically has a defined endpoint, albeit a long time in the future. And therefore, for purposes of taxation, HMRC view it as a bet on the price going one way or the other, as opposed to you potentially owning a contract for difference.
So am I right in saying it's a bit, when you talk about betting, it's a bit like betting on the horses or betting on sport. Those are also tax-free, am I right?
It's seen like that because it has an expiry. But obviously, unlike betting on the horses, it's not a fixed odds trade. It's, could go either way.
Sure. And okay, I mean, that's fascinating. And I know that a lot of people listening to this podcast, you know, we've got quite a big audience down in South Africa, but we're also focusing to try and grow this out into the UK and the US market as well. So it's a pity, I guess, that it's a product that's not available outside the UK. Is it available in any other market outside the UK, or is it just the UK where this is available?
It's just the UK.
Just the UK, yeah.
I think one difference, I mean, I did a lot of work with the team, with the IG team down in South Africa, Garth, actually. I think it was just while you were kind of moving up here. But the one thing that I found, products in South Africa are rand denominated, and therefore you can trade a fairly limited number of markets, domestic stocks, the main index.
Yeah.
I know that I believe we're launching or have just launched rand denominated index markets. So
yes.
One of the things that you can get with a spread bet for UK investors and traders, I can trade everything in sterling. Because I could trade Apple in sterling, I could trade dollar yen in sterling, I could trade bonds in sterling, because I'm classifying my bet in pounds per point. Now, by the guys in South Africa opening up that ability to trade a rand denominated DAX contract or a rand denominated FX contract, that's, you know, you're not necessarily getting access to the tax-free piece, but what you are getting is, you know, an exposure to a foreign or an international market in your currency, which is actually fairly similar to a spread bet.
Yeah, okay. I know that's a new development, and I've seen amongst a number of people that I follow there that's been quite exciting, quite well received, and I think it's going to be very successful down there. And for those listeners on the podcast who've not yet seen that, you know, just be aware exactly what Luke said. IG have opened rand-denominated indices and forex pairs in South Africa, so you can trade likes of the DAX and the S&P 500 and the Wall Street, et cetera, in rands, which is an exciting development. Guys, we only have a certain amount of time on the podcast, so we are kind of getting towards the end of that time. Believe it or not, time flies when you're having fun. But we're approaching Christmas, and for those who might be looking for ideas, something to put under the tree for either themselves or for somebody else, let's talk books. I'm sure all of us being market people have a favorite trading book. So I want to go around the table and ask all of you if you've got one or two books you'd recommend as your preferred or as your favorite looking out to Christmas, something that listeners might want to consider putting onto the wish list.
I think these two are fighting over the book. I think they both came with a similar idea.
Anyone we've read?
Well, let's hear it, right? If you're fighting over it, it must be good. Which one is it?
You go for it, Pink, because I've got others.
You're more well-read. The only reason I chose mine was I was actually introduced or recommended this book by a client of mine. And he said, if you're into trading, this is kind of one that you've got to cut your teeth with, which was The Reminiscence of a Stock Operator. By Lefebvre, all about sort of early 1910 stock market, a guy called Jesse Livermore, who's trading bid-ask spreads in basically bucket shops, but then also cornering various commodities markets and squeezing markets. And it's just a good old school look back to, you know, how it used to work, and go and get the ticket and, you know, push for more and, you know, all this sort of stuff. Yeah. So it's a good little glimpse back into the past.
Yeah.
I enjoyed reading that.
So it's a classic, right? And I've read it and listened to it as well as an audiobook. And it's fascinating just how the principles that he refers to have not changed at all. The principles of markets, what drives markets, the fear, the greed, the emotions, et cetera, all still apply today as much as they did when that book was written. And if I'm not wrong, I think that book's over 100 years old.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And you know, I'm stealing this part of your talk, really. But I initially started actually reading the book, but because it was written a long, long time ago, it's written in a type of English that is almost a little bit difficult to grasp. I found, and actually, I found listening to it as an audio book much easier to consume than actually reading it, the text. I don't know whether you found the same, Pete.
Yeah. No, I read it on holiday on a Kindle, so using a modern way to crack an old book, I guess. I just went through it in stages, but I think you touched on something there, which is you know, for those people now who commute, those, you know, audio books for things like this, a great way to to basically to sort of attack these sort of books.
I think, Garth, it was you that told me that it's on audiobook and it's still on my to listen to list. I haven't got through it yet.
Have you not?
No. Wow. I need to get on it.
I would say that's my favourite if I had to choose one, and it's probably the one I've reread most times. And I don't want to steal your thunder, but the whole premise of sort of the nostalgia of going into like bucket shops, reading the tape, and as you say, sort of like learning lessons about, I don't know, over trading, cutting losses, just general principles for trading. I think it's a great book.
Yeah.
No, I'll probably read it more than any. But I've got a whole host of books that I could. You mentioned Market Wizard. If something a bit more heavier, Intelligent Investor by Benjamin Graham. It's a bit more sort of value investing, more of a methodical approach to trading, but a bit heavier, a bit more not as light reading, doesn't flow as well for me as the Stock Operator. But one that's more recent is The Trading Game by Gary Stevenson. That is sort of a reflection of his, well, it starts in his early life, but then how he gets into an investment bank, onto a trading floor. Quite a unique way, to my knowledge, of getting into a job. But it gives you a good idea about the characters you meet on the trading floor, the environment, sort of psychology, the human behaviour of it, as well as the sort of the emotional and the stress of that job. So I think I read it probably about 2 months ago, but I thought it was a great book. So if anyone hasn't read that yet, I'd definitely recommend that.
Yeah, that's a good one. I've actually also just finished it as an audiobook about 3 weeks ago, Sean, and thoroughly enjoyed it as well. Very gripping story, really well worth it. And it is quite a new book. I think it only came out in 2023. So
I think it was actually this year, earlier this year.
Is it this year?
Yeah. So are audiobooks cheating, by the way? I mean,
I've never
listened to an audiobook.
It's not cheating because you let me tell you, I love audiobooks because you can do two things at once. You know, I can be taking a walk and listening to an audiobook, or mowing the lawn, or driving and listening to an audiobook. It's fantastic. I find it's the way I consume books now, because it's just in a world where I certainly don't get time to sit down and read. If I do, my kids come and disturb me. So it's nice to be able to do two things at once whilst you're doing something else that's a bit mundane. Listen to an audiobook and get your gray matter stimulated at the same time.
I couldn't even use my Kindle. You mentioned Kindle. I can't. I have to read a hard copy like a book.
Get out there. Get on the Peloton.
What's yours, Luke?
Mine's going to be fairly, I think it's a fairly recent one. Howard Marks, famous investor of Oak Tree Capital fame. He was quite famous for having like an all-court investment strategy. So a client gave me a book called Mastering the Market Cycle by him. And what I thought was really fascinating about it is it's less a trading book, but more a way to frame decision-making. So he talks about the market cycle going from recovery through to being in its growth phase, correcting, and then being in decline. So that you, in any kind of market, you will often find one form of asset class in one of these phases. And then when you're in one of those phases, how do you make money out of it? So if something's in a bull market, that's a growth phase. What are the key things to keep an eye on if that bull phase is starting to slow? How does it then correct and break down? And then how does it decline? And it was interesting because the way I've always approached my own kind of finances is that I try to have my long portfolio in my ISA and my pension. And then I use the trading pot to kind of put specific plays on. And you know, whilst we sit here in front of markets all the time, we're actually chatting to clients the whole time. So we're not trading during work hours, but it gives us a lot of context. So I often get ideas and things that I want to express. And so by having a bit of a grid and a bit of a, a model is to say, right, I'm going to take a look at gold. I think it's in the growth phase at the moment. I think we've seen a bit of a dip recently and it's kind of bounced off of a trend line. If it's in this phase, how am I going to want to play it? Am I looking at the options market? Is it something that is worth looking at a spread bet? Is it worth something defined risk or non-defined risk? And that helps me just to kind of, it's a bit of a map really. And I thought it was fascinating. It gave me a real kind of different view on how to approach setting up my own risk management process.
Very good. Okay, I've not come across that one, so I'll keep an eye out for that, Luke. Thanks. Lastly, I mentioned. Mine. Okay, so look, I mean, one of the defaults that so many people go to is Trading in the Zone by Mark Douglas. And I do love that book. It's the book I've probably read the most. I actually try and make a habit of rereading it once a year because the lessons in that book are so fundamental, but so important that, you know, just to remind yourself of those lessons occasionally, I find very, very helpful. So that would be my immediate suggestion. But, you know, I've read probably over 100 trading books. There are lots of really, really excellent books out there. So, but yeah, I mean, if you're putting me on the spot and I have to pick one, that would be it.
So I'm gonna challenge the question, I suppose. I actually read very little in the way of books. And I think you and I spoke about this when I saw you fairly recently, Garth. Podcasts are the way that I listen to things. So an audiobook, I suppose, is the same as a podcast. Do you find that are trading books still being consumed in the same volume that they were previously? Or do you find that the medium that we're talking to each other on, podcasts, give you such a unique insight to be a fly on the wall in a really kind of quite, you know, a long form manner to get a view of the nuance of a conversation or how someone's going to be accentuating their words? Do you think the trading books still hold their weight, or do you think podcasts and this type of, you know, longer form content, discussion based conversations are a way that people are going to continue to consume their content?
It's a good question. And I guess, you know, everything in the world is moving faster. We want access to things quicker that we can consume faster. Yeah. So I guess that's why podcasts are becoming popular, right? Because you can get access to that information in a convenient way, shorter time frame, as opposed to an audio book, which is, or reading a book. But I mean, a lot of the books that I listen to are anything from sort of 9-10 hours up to 16-17 hours long. That's a big commitment in terms of time. And in fact, a lot of the time, you can condense those books down into a lot shorter time. I know there's actually something my wife uses, which I forget what it's called now, but basically it's a service or an app or something along those lines that takes books and really just like dilutes them down into their most important components so that you can essentially listen to a book that would have been 13 hours long, but listen to it in an hour because they just distill out the most important bits.
Okay. Blink, isn't it? It's called Blinkist, I think. Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's exactly what it's called, yeah.
So the books get drilled down into little blinks, and each chapter has basically like a
That's crazy. Summary. I think, yeah, well, I mean, you've got two things. One is people want reading or audio books as a way of having, like, downtime and escape. And, like, yeah, you can multitask whilst you do it. But I guess the podcast stuff, it gives you – you can become more of a overall – jack of all with listening to 10 different podcasts. But if you want a very comprehensive knowledge of a topic, I think you've got to do the whole book. And if you want to be master of 10 things, you've got to read over 100 books like the main man up there. Porch waits on Musk gives us a chip, we'll stick it in the brain.
Just download the information straight into our head. That'll be great.
Got it all.
Guys, as we wrap up, I just want to quickly touch on your podcast because I know it's new. I think you've done, is it two episodes of it so far?
We're up to three now, I think.
Three.
A pilot and two live ones. Two proper ones.
All right. I've listened to two of them then. I didn't realize there was a third one. And I've thoroughly enjoyed it. So let's just quickly talk about that. I like to cross-pollinate if there is an opportunity to do so with other podcast hosts, which you all are. Let's just quickly touch on that. It's called Talking Shop, right?
Yeah, the premise of it was we wanted to put people – as we were just saying, right, a fly on the wall on a conversation that we're having all the time on the dealing floor. And in our kind of search of trying to reach more clients all at the same time at scale, we wanted to find a way to broadcast these conversations. Talking shop is why it is, because whenever we go to meet a client in the finance circles, you've got to go and talk a little bit of shop, right? We're coming to meet you and I want to get to know you a little bit better. But the whole reason here is we need to talk a bit of business. We need to talk a little bit of shop. So that was where the name came from. We were fairly fortunate with our first two episodes. One was on the UK budget, big macro event number one of the year. And then the second episode was on the US election, big macro event number two of the year. And so we're now kind of
The third episode was around FOMO, the fear of missing out. We're trying to take a topic.
Well, arguably, I'd say that had the most relevant content for a trader, because it's day-to-day stuff where you're watching stuff, you're missing stuff, you're wanting to be on things, but you're not on them, and it's what's causing you to, you know, I think that was the most relatable in terms of stuff for a takeaway for a trader.
So
I guess, maybe for our next topic, we've got to maybe get on that route.
Yeah, I think, you know, what we were talking about in terms of what are the things that winning clients do and what are the things that losing clients do badly, if we can pluck things out of there and talk about the, you know, the markets as they are now, you know, the day we're talking, it's the day of NVIDIA's results, of course, and the FOMO that was covered in our FOMO episode, crypto was covered in our FOMO episode. So if we can figure out a series of conversations that are going to be framed around something like that, that's what we're here for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good stuff. And I like the evergreen nature of it as well. So it's good. Keep it up. I really enjoy the listening to the three of you. It's actually four of you, because your other sidekick, Sarah, is also on the podcast, although I know she's off on maternity leave soon, right?
She left today. Wish her all the best. She's I think she's expecting next week. So wish her all the
Make
best.
Big shoes to fill.
Big shoes to fill. But also, look, it's really good chatting to you. And if we can continue to get some feedback from you, Garth, you know, you're on season four of Talking with Traders. Is that right? Season five?
We're on season nine. And this is, I think you guys are episode number 112, I think.
Wow. Okay. So we've got some work to do.
Yeah, but everybody starts somewhere. And I think you guys are off to a cracking start with your podcast. I've listened to them and I've thoroughly enjoyed them, actually. Very, very easily listening, and good work you guys are doing.
No, thank you.
Thanks.
So Talking Shop. You can get us on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get the podcasts.
Excellent. Highly recommended. All right, guys, we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time. It's been a pleasure. And I look forward to catching up with all of you again in the flesh soon.
Thanks guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Cheers.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Talking with Traders, sponsored by IG, a world-leading CFD provider. We really are privileged to have such a strong global provider of online trading services as our backer for this podcast series. Remember to subscribe for more episodes by clicking on the subscribe button of your favorite podcast app. Or if you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel, give us a thumbs up, and leave a comment. We welcome the engagement. Till next time.